Thank you very much for coming, everybody. I'd like to welcome you very much to this Credo seminar. We have a number of seminars through the year with people often from an international background, but I think we're particularly pleased this time to have somebody from Turkey, which I think is one of those countries that all of us know a little bit about, but not many of us know very much about. I think it's a very, very interesting country, quite close to the UK in geographical terms, but really quite interestingly different, I think, in cultural terms and historical terms. So it's fantastic to have Özlem here today from Boğaziçi University in Istanbul. And Özlem did her MA in adult education at Boğaziçi and then continued her study for her PhD at Manchester University, which was an eccentric choice but seems to have worked out quite well. Her research study was informal skill acquisition at car repair and carpentry workshops. So some quite interesting stuff. And if you talk to Özlem nicely, she'll tell you some of the horror stories of some of the things that you saw in some of the workshops. Özlem returned back to Boğaziçi University in 1999 and has been teaching there since then. So that's 11 years now, yeah?
Too long.
And her research interests are vocational skill acquisition, education in prisons, teacher training, and adult literacy. Now, I should also say that Özlem is one of the top adult education researchers in Turkey and is involved with the ministry and a number of international organizations. You're probably in the top six, I would say.
Because we are only six or seven
people. Yeah, I knew that. So, welcome, Özlem. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this, and we'll look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thank you for coming, and today I will be talking about the overall adult education issue in Turkey from the historical point of view to what happens today, and feel free to cut me and ask questions whenever you like to ask something. So the title is The Bridge Between Europe and Asia, the challenges of adult education in Turkey, and we had a few discussions about that with Ralph, and then we decided just to put the bridge over there, so you will see the bridge later. This is like this?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Turkey, and my university is somewhere here at the Bosphorus, and Boğaziçi University means Bosphorus University, and this is the European part and the Asian part, and this is our nice, beautiful bridge. And my university is somewhere here. Just to give a general idea of what Turkey is, the population is 76 million, the population growth rate is 1.3, and the age distribution is, we have been a very young country, but now we are becoming more middle-aged. So the issues are in fact changing. Before that we had problems in primary education because we had so many students in primary education, but now we have employment problem because now they are grown up and they are in the workforce. The urban population is 69% and population below poverty line is 20%. So this is a very general introduction. I would like to talk a little bit about the history of adult education in Turkey because our republic is established in 1923 and since then we are trying to establish and found a sound adult education system in Turkey, and Turkey administrative system is very centralized. You will see that later on, and everything is kind of putting everything in legal order. So the unification of education law is very important for us because before that in the Ottoman Empire the religious education and the secular education was separated and there had been a lot of problems. Then all types of education including adult education, vocational education, religious and all kinds of are under the unification of education law to the Ministry of Education. Everything is controlled by the ministry now. Adoption of a new alphabet is very important because then the whole country became illiterate, and then we had big massive nation schools and literacy campaigns to make the whole nation literate again. But then the literacy rate wasn't that high. In fact, before the adoption of the new alphabet, it was just about 10%. So People's houses are important because they were community centers in cities, and people's rooms were community centers in towns and villages. And these are important because the Republican People's Party, the only party back then, wanted to establish a citizenship and nationality of Turkish, new Turkish Republic. So these worked for it. But then in 1950, Democratic Party won the elections, and the Democratic Party was more rightist, and they were against the Republican Party's issues, what they are doing in the people's houses, trying to enlighten the people, so they closed the people's houses. So this is something, again, important in the history. And village institutes are very, very important for us, because village institutes wanted to create a nation from the local, because before that the teachers would go from the cities to the villages, and they wouldn't know the lives of the villages, and the villagers wouldn't cooperate with the people, with the teachers who come from the cities. Instead, what they decided was, okay, if we educate the villagers in the villages, and if they return back to their own villages as teachers, then we will change the community. So it was kind of community development project, the village institutes. But again, the this was the doing of the Republican People's Party. But after, again, the Democratic Party won the elections, they were not happy to enlighten the people, because if the people are not enlightened, then they would control them better. So the village institutes are also closed down. So these are some historical stories. Anyway, later, after the 60s, started the time for the organization and legalization of the adult education activities. So we have the General Directorate of Public Education, and then we had the General Directorate of Apprenticeship. These two were separate, but then in 1983, all of them brought together, and then we only have General Directorate of Apprenticeship and Non-Formal Education now. Everything is under the Minister of Education, General Directorate of Apprenticeship and Non-Formal Education. So just to give an idea about the numbers of students in Turkey. Welcome.
No, that's fine. That's great. You need to get there as well. And I haven't eaten anything. It's already
you have you have cookies here. Just
I've got my sandwiches.
Okay. We can share your sandwiches.
Thank
you. We can share.
Well, that's a nice more than one to
know that I'm very, very sorry.
No problem.
So this is
Liam Kane,
who works
now. Oh, okay. Nice to meet you, Özlem. I was just talking about the history, so it's over now. And
oh,
it was just short. And then just to give an idea about the bigness of student body in Turkey, I just put some numbers. You will see a lot of numbers. It would become boring after some time, but still it is informative in a way, so I just put them there. We have about 10 million students in primary education. In secondary education, it's about 4 million. And in higher education, it's about less than 1 million. So it would give an idea about how many students are going through the stages. So it's not very high. Primary education, I suppose, is about 95% or so. We are saying that it's 100%, but it's not, because dropout rates are quite continuing still. So it's about 94-95% schooling in primary education. And then we lose a lot of students in secondary education, and then in higher education we have much less students. And overall, if we calculate all age groups and everything, on average, Turkish people have 4 years of education. So it is really not much, but when the whole population is calculated. Anyway, so as I said that we gathered everything under the Ministry of Educational Education, General Directorate of Apprenticeship and Non-Formal Education. This is very long. Anyway, So it depends on the basic law on national education, which is enacted in 1973, I guess. I don't remember, but everything is on that law, and we are supposed to provide literacy for all, provide educational opportunities for all, safeguard and integrate the national cultural values there, and citizenship education is again under the duties of the ministry. Assisting people to lead a healthy lifestyle and balanced diet is the ministry's issue. Promoting productive use of leisure and blah, blah. So everything is kind of in the law and in the regulations to be done by the ministry, the general directors. So this is all about the non-formal education institutions, teachers and participants controlled by the general directorate. So generally, there are two very important institutions we have, the public education centers and vocational training centers. I will be talking a little bit about them and the problems, in fact, they are going through. Although you see a lot of people are participating in the courses provided by them, and these are all for free courses provided by the general director. So, number of participants impacts, you can have a general look. The numbers are there just to have an idea. I'm not going to go through them one by one. People education centers are established in 1953, as I'm not wrong, something like that. And they are the very important organizations for education of the public. They are, as I said, for free. Everybody who wants to attend can attend. And some of the courses you have to pay a little bit amount of money, like computer courses, because they need extra care and so on. Oh, okay. So they have three types of courses: vocational courses, yes, social cultural courses, and literacy courses. Vocational courses are like computer courses and cutting and sewing courses and electricity courses, and I don't know, all those kind of courses. But the interesting thing is about 25% of the courses are computer-linked courses, and the other 25% are cutting, sewing, those kind of courses. So 50% is like that, the other 50% is other things. And the cutting and sewing and embroidery courses are under the vocational courses, but in fact, the participants are very young girls who are not sent to school, but they are sent to these centers because the families think that public education centers are safe places to send your daughter. Mm-hmm. So if you are a female and after primary schooling, if you are not sent to school, they send you to the public education center because there you can go and learn how to make embroidery, and you can prepare something for your marriage, for example. So these are working like this. Not all of them, but generally that 25% is like that. Social cultural courses are like music courses, sports courses, theater, language courses, anything you can think of. And literacy courses participants are, again, an important function of these public education centers is continuing the nation schools' role teaching literacy to the whole people. Because in Turkey, literacy is still a problem. I cannot remember the exact numbers, but I think the overall illiteracy rate is, No. 23%, and it is about 20% for female. Mm-hmm. Female illiteracy is about 20%, and male illiteracy about 7 or 9%. I'm not sure of. I always mix the numbers, but female illiteracy is about 20%, and male is about 7%. So we have very big national campaigns for literacy. I have also put the literacy campaigns, which the earliest started in 1928.
I was really curious, I was struck in the last slide by the fact that the PEC number of participants has tripled in 5 years. See, the total number has gone from 1.1 million to 3.4 million?
It's 2003 and it's 2008. Oh, okay. I see.
Why? What happened?
I don't know. The thing is, I'll tell you. I say I don't know, but I know. okay, I will talk about later, but there are the municipalities now. After 2002 or 3, I don't remember the exact date, but it is there in the slide. The municipalities started to establish their own courses. Before that, only the public education centers would offer courses to the public. But then they become soft, I guess, and they are not very well paid, and they are not struggling hard, and so on. Then especially the Istanbul municipalities started providing courses to the public, especially vocational courses and handcrafts courses by using its own sources. But it was illegal then. But the Istanbul municipality was doing this illegal. Then a new law enacted, and then the municipalities were given the chance to open their own courses. Then there came a challenge for the public education centers. Then the directors, the administrators had to work harder and publicize more. And then they, for example, started doing projects with the European Union and so on. So they are now becoming more active. So they are somehow creating their own resources at the same time, because the fundings are really very low. Sometimes they can't even pay their heating expenses and so on, but now they are creating their own resources. So the numbers are increasing. So sometimes, I think because of that, I cannot say for sure, but so you see there are many, many, many literacy campaigns, so I'm not going to go into detail. The final one is 2008. These two are initiated by, one of them is initiated by the wife of the president in charge, and the other one is initiated by the wife of the prime minister. So if you go back, the number for this year is quite high, so a lot of people is in the literacy campaigns. The only difference is, in fact, in these literacy campaigns, the public education centers are doing all the job. They do whatever they are doing as the same, but they publicize it more. So they are on the TV, we are having a campaign, they are on the newspapers, and so, and that makes the whole difference. And I have talked to a few women who are participating in these literacy campaigns, and the interesting thing is they said that I would come to these centers before if I knew before. I didn't know they are offering such courses. So I had difficulty with this word, publicity, yeah, thank you. with publicity, the numbers increase. So do you have any questions related with public education centers? Because I'll pass to vocational training centers.
Just about the relationship with somebody, perhaps, because I noticed the social cultural courses is quite a significant increase. It's almost five times as much, is it? Do you think?
If
yes, the social cultural. I'm not very good with the figures, but it looks like it's significantly significantly increased in comparison to the others. I mean, is there a lot of crossover? Do people do more than one particular program? Do you have? You know, is there patterns if they do literacy courses that might encourage them, increase their confidence, to then go on and do other types of courses?
In fact, people do a lot different courses. So this is not the people, but number of participants. So I don't know the exact number. Perhaps there are 800 people, 100,000 people participating in two courses. I cannot say, but this is the numbers who are registering to the courses. But yeah, generally they continue doing courses. And in fact, the teachers here, there's no numbers of the teachers. Okay. The teachers who teach in these centers are, in fact, either literacy, not literacy, primary school teachers that are teaching, or master trainers who have no educational formation in their life. They would be secondary school graduates or high school graduates and have no training at all, because they just know how to do something they are teaching. And the others, especially the literacy teachers, are the teachers from primary education. They have no training in adult education. They don't know anything. They participate in no teacher training, adult trainers of trainers, something like that. So that's also a problem for us, because in the classroom, it's very traditional type of teaching and learning atmosphere. Especially I have been to literacy courses and the literacy course participants, and I can say that they are teaching using the methods they know from primary school. And that's interesting. When I talk to the ladies there who are participating in the courses, they are participating to the same course two or three times, because they cannot learn how to read and write in one course. So, for example, one of the ladies was saying, oh, okay, this is my third time, but I'm hopeful I will take the same course next year, and next year I will be better. So this is something like that. And this 385,000 doesn't mean that they have learned how to read and write. The other important organization in Turkey is the vocational training centers. Okay, so we have apprenticeship training, especially here in these centers. It would go through the candidate apprenticeship to apprenticeship, then to journeymanship, then you become a trainer, a master, then you can be a master trainer. So this is from the traditional apprenticeship training in Turkey, because in the old times we had the ahi system. It was a fraternity system where a master would teach to an apprentice, and the apprentice at the same time would go to a school. So it was kind of a dual system, and it comes from the 11th century on. But in 19th century, or in early 20th century, the system collapsed because of issues of economics and so on, and the country was in an upheaval. Anyway, later on, the traditional apprenticeship system continued, but then the government legalized the system, and every apprentice who are working in a factory or workshop has to go one day a week to a vocational training center. So they work 5 days in a workshop or company, and they go to school 1 day a week. So there, it's kind of 6 days work for the apprentices. But the numbers are here not very high, 130. To give an example, this is for the whole Turkey, but I know that in Istanbul, at least, there are 200,000 apprentices, and there are only about 20,000 apprentices are at school. So they are all working illegally. They don't have social security and so on. So we are still lacking a good provision to the people who need it. I don't know what to explain more about vocation training centers, but you have to go through the system until you become a master trainer in order to be able to open a workshop. That's very important. The law requires that, but in real life, nobody abides to that. You can just open your workshop. And if you are not a master trainer, you are not allowed to get an apprentice to work with you. But again, because you work undercover, so you take as many apprentices as you like. So Ralph was mentioning about my horror stories. When I was doing my PhD, I was talking with the car repairman and carpentry apprentices and masters. And if the masters were not around, I usually chose not to spoke with the apprentices because then the masters would get angry. But on that day, there was a journeyman, and he said, oh, okay, the owner of the workshop is my uncle, and I'm sure he will allow me to talk to you. And I said, okay, perhaps I should take his permission first. No, me. And then, okay, I started talking with the apprentices and the journeyman, and I was tape recording and taking notes, and then the master was coming with a fury, and he was so angry, and he just kicked the boys, and I was kind of like this, horrified. And later on, I walked around and asked to the other masters what happened, and they said that he was very afraid. Afraid of what? Because he thought that you are a member of the government and you are trying to find out whether he's legal or illegal, and we are all here illegal, so we are all afraid of you, in fact. And that's the situation. And but in smaller cities, the control is more there because people know the streets and the workshops and so on. So in Istanbul, it's a problem, but in smaller cities, there are other problems. Anyway, this is for providing training to the apprenticeship in order to become masters, and it's an important task of the government. So if you look to the drawbacks of apprenticeship training, I would say that in these schools, the center's technological upgrading is not good. They're not providing good training to their apprentices. Time duration of the programs needed revision because it is 2 or 4 years, depending on the type of apprenticeship, but they're not determined very well, so it needs revision. Adaptation needed to the delayed entrance into the system. Before 1997, mandatory school was for 5 years. The compulsory school was for 5 years. Now it is 8 years. And when it was for 5 years, then apprentices would enter the system of apprenticeship earlier. But now it is there. Big, more old. So the masters say that it's not good for us because you cannot train an old guy. They think that the children are too old to obey them, because part of the apprenticeship system is to learn how to obey the master and do the things he asks for, because it is the traditional type of relationship. So you start with fetching the tools and doing the things and so on, then you learn how to obey. And then finally you start learning your business, whatever. So the masters are not happy of this. Inadequate training of teachers and mentors are here also important. Most of the teachers come from the general school. The vocational training center teachers are from the formal education system. So they have a problem with this adult education system. They still see these participants as students in the formal education system and treat them as such. So they see everything as disciplinary problem, but these are the working boys or girls, and they assume a different stature in their life. So their behaviors are different, but they expect them to be the same as the formal education school system students. Anyway, so there are problems there. There is the problem of low status of apprentices because they come from lower SES families, there are school dropouts. The certificate is not clear. The status of the certificate is not clear. That's very important because, as I said, you are required to be a master to become to be able to open a workshop, but in reality, you don't have to. You do it. So what is the importance of this certificate? It has no value at all. So this also makes the status of apprenticeship training very low. It's not well connected to further education opportunities, and the tough working conditions are also a problem, which makes the apprenticeship something low scale. So we are working on that. As I said before, vocational training and art courses of municipalities are becoming a challenge to the public education centers. So a lot of people are participating in different cities to these courses. So the numbers are becoming more. It's not very much, but this is one of the things the municipalities are doing. Okay, any questions until now? I'm just kind of trying to give you all the numbers and things, but
yeah. Are the apprentices mainly male, traditionally male trades?
Yeah, most of the apprentices. Okay, he's asking that if the apprentices are male. Yeah, I think 90% of the apprentices are male. The female apprentices. Oh, okay. To give numbers for the apprentices, I would say that, again, half of the participants in vocational education, vocational training centers are either barbership or hairdressing, ladies or male hairdressing and barber, because they are the ones which are controlled most by the government. It's easy to go to a barber shop and just look for the, because they are open, everybody sees that. You have to make yourself seen, but in other occupations you can hide yourself, so you don't have to be legal openly. So about 50% of the whole apprenticeship system, apprentices are just hairdressing and barber, and the other half is other occupations. So it's still illegal. A lot of apprenticeship is still illegal. So an interesting thing still under the apprenticeship and non-formal education is the distance education. So it is again controlled by the Ministry of Education, by the Adult Education Department. We have open primary education, open secondary education, and open higher education. And I don't know for one, I don't know the reason why it's not under the formal education system, because they are granted diplomas at the end, but they are under the control of the non-formal education. So distance education is becoming important in Turkey, especially for school dropouts. They are trying to take them back into the system with open education, either primary or secondary, because school dropouts are quite high. There are reasons. For girls, they are not sent to school because they are now growing up in traditional families, and it's not good to send the girl to a school the whole time because she's now a grown-up female and so on. So some dropouts are because of female things. And some others are because of work-related reasons, because the child has to work, so there's no time to go to school, and so on. But this is kind of trying to safeguard that they go on to schooling somehow. Again, if we come to the numbers of who the people in adult education programs are, the numbers are not so bright. We only have three graduate programs in all Turkey, in three universities. Before 1997, we had one undergraduate program, then we had another. So the undergraduate level students number is this much in whole Turkey. And now we don't have it after 1997. And then we look to the level of the number of students in master's level, it is this much, and PhD is this much. So the academic studies concerning adult education in Turkey is not so bright, I would say. I don't know the numbers in United Kingdom, but we are only a bunch of people there in Turkey doing this. It is because not new programs are opened, and this is always an issue in the development plans and educational councils. They're always talking about that there should be more importance given to the training of the teachers who are working in the area of adult education, but it is never actualized. So it has been in the agenda for years and years, but it's only on the agenda. It's not actualized yet. So this is one of the major problems, I would say. So I put a few EU-funded programs to the presentation because we are candidates now in the European Union process. And there is one very important project which is called Strengthening the Vocational Education and Training System in Turkey. A lot of effort is in vocational education system in Turkey. This project started in 2002, and the main aim is improving the qualified labor force, and the social partners are, these are important organizations, vocational and educational organizations in Turkey anyway. The objectives of this program was, the project was to develop occupational standards, development of training standards, and to do a national qualification system and vocational qualification authority and revision of the existing curricula to be based on the ISCET 97. I don't know whether you know ISCET 97, but this is a European way of leveling the jobs. Okay, so we have an 8-level structure which is compatible with the European qualifications framework, and another objective of the project is the development of lifelong learning concept for Turkey, and this is becoming very important. Everybody is talking about lifelong learning, but this is also a threat for us in Turkey because of our demographic distribution in terms of training and education. So ISCET 97 is like this in Turkey, from level 1 to level 8. Level 1 is the lowest and the level 8 is the highest. So this is in line with the European Union requirements now. We have changed everything, and the and we have this vocational qualification authority law norm, which is in line with the European Union again. And we have a program for education for democratic citizenship. It is again related with the European Union thing. We have signed in the this is for providing the guidance of education for democratic citizenship, which is based on the European Union guidelines. And we now have a citizenship knowledge course that is to be offered in public education centers to the people. And for example, in 2007, 938 participants attended these courses. I don't know what these courses are and who attends, but this is in line with the European Union. Another important project is support the basic education in Turkey, which had 8 components, which one was related with quality of education in primary education curriculum, and now they are writing new textbooks. They are going to write about 200 new textbooks related with this. Teacher training is another component. Non-formal education, especially providing education for the female and the disability groups and the underrepresented groups, is an issue. Communication and management and organization are other issues. As I said, lifelong learning is becoming important in Turkey, and we have signed the Lisbon Strategy and and the 2002 Council Resolution on Lifelong Learning. So the lifelong learning issue is in our development plan now, and in our educational council, and SWET is also for managing this lifelong learning issue in Turkey. But the problem is too much focus on qualifications and certification in Turkey is a threat for us, because we have more basic problems of education, and we have to provide more social cultural education and help the women to become more active in the society and so on. But most of the courses, since the lifelong learning is in the agenda, we are all trying for vocational development. So in fact, the lifelong learning doesn't define itself, so there are there's some focus on social promotion of education and so on, but how we take it is more focusing on the vocational part and the qualifications. That's the problem. So I had a look at how we use the concept of adult education in Turkey in the National Education Councils. So first we started with the education of people, that is named like that, education of the people. Then we have the concept non-formal education for some time. Then again we revert back to the education of people. Then we started using continuing education. This is where we start perhaps more European thinking. And then again in 90s it's non-formal education. Then it's again continuing education, the concept used, and now it is lifelong learning. Everywhere on all documents now we are talking about lifelong learning. So it's somehow evolved from education of the people or education of the folks. I don't know which fits better, but Hauk means folks, folk education to lifelong learning. So you can see the change throughout the years in Turkey. And I have put just a few challenges that came to my mind. The majority of full-time educators working at public education centers are formal school teachers, as I mentioned before. So this is a big problem, especially the administrators are also like that. So they don't have a concept of adult education in their mind, and whatever they do from their experiences from their primary school years. So that's a problem. Having only three graduate school programs in adult education is also another problem. We don't have any undergraduate programs. So numbers of academicians who have academic credentials are less than 10 people in Turkey like me. There are not 10 people like me in Turkey who works in the area of adult education. And for me, it is not my whole working life, because I have to teach other courses to the undergrads unrelated to adult education. But besides, I have to do research in adult education and concentrate in adult education. So it's kind of, I'm divided into two parts. So I know my other friends are like that. They are kind of divided into the formal thing and the adult education studies. There are still insufficient provision in areas such as education for adults with disabilities, democratic participation, human rights, and so on, environmental awareness. So these are becoming more and more important, and especially the voluntary organizations are working on this. I haven't put the information here on voluntary organizations, but we have some very, very big and influential voluntary organizations in Turkey. Some of them are especially focused on the mother-child training. Some of them are environmental consciousness. Some of them are more on voluntary participation in democratic life and so on. So they are doing rather good job, but it's also debatable. Literacy education is also a problem, because although they learn how to read and write, they are not functionally literate people. They are just numbers who have learned literacy, but they are not reading a book, they are not reading the newspaper, perhaps they are just now know that which bus they would be taking. That's all related with literacy. That's a problem. And another problem is adult education institutions run by the ministry, public education centers are as such. they offer courses only within the daytime, within the school time periods from 9 to 5 in during the day. So if you are a working man or woman, it's difficult for you to go to those courses, even if they are for free. So most of the time, the unemployed or the housewives are going to these courses. That's also a problem which should change in time. So I think this is all I'm going to go through, just to give an idea, and I would be happy to answer your questions, because that would be more perhaps informative.